You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one podcast for all things communication, advertising, and marketing. I'm your host, Ted Lau, award-winning agency owner, podcaster, and full-time dad. Today, we have with us Arthur Protasio. Arthur is an award-winning multi-platform writer, director, and narrative designer, known for his work on the Emmy-nominated series Now Generation and the games Wonderbox, The Adventure Maker, Cobra Kai, The Karate Kid Saga Continues, Sword Legacy, Omen, and Angus. The last two that I just listed were actually winners of Best Game, Best Storytelling, and Best VR. Arthur has worked on both independent and blockbuster IPs, and in 2015 founded storytelling studio Fableware Narrative Design. Arthur has collaborated with Disney, Sony Pictures, Samsung, Team 17, TV Globo in Brazil, and Netflix. And he shares the knowledge acquired as creative writing professor at the University of British Columbia. Arthur, welcome.
Thank you so much, Ted. It is amazing to be here and to get this chance to talk with you and just discuss storytelling manifested in marketing.
Yeah, man. Well, hey, thanks for your time. You and I have met a few years back when you kind of first arrived in the city and on the scene, but you had done a lot of great things by then. And actually, when we met, you were talking about, you know, the work that you've done with Disney and all these kind of things. And I really got interested in how detailed you are when it comes to storytelling. So maybe tell me a little bit, tell us, you know, the audience a little bit about, you know, what you do from a storytelling perspective, especially when it pertains to games and different kinds of platforms.
For sure. It's actually a very interesting question, because whenever I think of myself as a content creator, given my experience in the video game industry, there are many who immediately associate me with the act of just writing a story or a script for a game. But I do think that if we take a step back, what I do really, and what essentially what every storyteller does, just really depending on the platform that you're dealing with, and in my case, that's why I take so much pride in being a multi-platform professional, because it's really about devising a message, establishing what is your core meaning, what is the essential symbol that cannot miss from that experience, and then finding the best ways to communicate it through a specific platform. And then, of course, when you analyze different platforms, you think of the strengths and weaknesses of comic books, of video games, of TV, of film, and so forth. So really what I do is just look critically at content and think, when dealing with this specific type of content, what's the best way to make it as accessible as possible? But of course, thinking of the emotional techniques that we can use to make sure that the message is being understood in a way that we think is interesting. If it's a thriller, we want that to create tension. If it's a comedy, we'll want that obviously to relieve tension. We want that to generate laughs. If it's an action game, for example, then it's a lot more focused on the mechanics and the way in which those mechanics empower the player to typically feel more to feel stronger, or to, if it's a fighting game, to deliver the proper blows. It's every platform and every genre even takes that discussion one step forward. So you have to really, really look closely at what story you want to tell and how you're telling that story.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, your focus on multi-platform is one that's very interesting to me. I grew up, you know, child of the 80s, watched a lot of movies, and I still do a bunch of Netflix. However, I missed the whole, you know, video game boat for whatever reason. I didn't get my Nintendo or Super Nintendo NES or whatever it was, the Sega Genesis. And I never really got onto the video game platform. And I was always curious about, you know, how you can do as a professional, tell stories. You know, how do you take the film element and put it into games when, you know, games is so interactive? It's kind of like that whole choose your own adventure type experience. How do you weave a narrative through that?
So it's so interesting you mentioned that, and even your childhood experience, right? Watching either cartoons or movies, etc. And I went through the same thing with the added element of video games, right? It's so interesting because you mentioned as well the comparison between video games as a medium and then when put side by side with movies, for example. But if we take a look historically at video games, they weren't always these cinematic experiences that we know today, right? I remember when I started playing on the Apple, and I was playing, I remember this game called Computer People, which in my opinion is like the precursor of The Sims. Everyone knows The Sims, and The Sims is fantastic. The Sims is like this amazing expanded immersive dollhouse experience, right? Made for everyone. But Computer People was really just this simple game where you had a man in a house and you would type things like go play pool or go take a shower or go do this. It didn't, I mean, depending on how deep we're taking this as a game design discussion, you can even question if it was really a game, because typically games have goals. You have the idea of risk versus reward. So if there's no risk, then is there a reward? If you're just telling the character to do something, what's the difference between a game and a toy? And that's a whole other discussion, which is very interesting and fascinating, by the way. But really, I just want to point out that we had, like, for example, when it comes to storytelling, lots of text adventures. And these text adventures were essentially what you said, the choose your own adventure aspect of it, but they had no visuals. Like, one of the most notable games to be sort of like a choose your own adventure experience that had visuals back then was Mystery House. And I think this was in 85. And still, you would have a bunch of other games that were just really text, no images whatsoever. So would it be possible to say that these games were drawing their influence from TV and film? I would say not. They were drawing their influence from literature. And what I really like about video games is that as technology evolved, of course, we're talking about the processing power of consoles, right? From all the way from the Atari to, today we have the PlayStation 5, for example. And also other types of technologies that go hand in hand with that. For example, VR or even the accessories that at some point were developed for the consoles when we had games like Rock Band and people had their own guitars and electric drums. So really, technology goes hand in hand with video games and it directly influences the type of stories that are told. But I do think that on the content side, there is such an interesting mix, such an interesting exchange between platforms, because it's at certain moments you will see video games being inspired by movies. And then you see even this connection happening. Like, you have now the adaptation of the game The Last of Us taken to the HBO series, and it's still not out yet, but I am really looking forward to it, because the game itself was a linear game that very much represented a very well-made movie. And on the other hand, you have all sorts of games. For example, one of my favorite games is Papers, Please. It's a very critical game. It talks about like political issues. It talks about issues of what happens to people who want to cross a border. And you are the immigration officer and you have to check documentation. So it has such a strong political stance to it, a social discourse to it. But when you play it, it's not exactly cinematic. It's more of a very mechanical game where you're doing a lot of cross-referencing between documents. You're checking someone's passport and seeing if they're still valid, if they're still in the expiration date. So would you say that is an inspiration to coming directly from movies, for example? I would say not. I would say that it's closer to perhaps maybe a board game where you're checking around your pieces and you're seeing if you have the right numbers. It's more of a puzzle game in many ways. So I think it's a huge, 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 huge mixture of several influences. But I do think that the evolution of technology plays a big role in how we decide to tell these stories.
Well, let's dive right into that. So the evolution of technology, that's definitely changed, right? Like, I do remember playing some games, and you're right, it was very much basically choose your own adventure, came out of literature, and it was like one image and a bunch of text that came on. But now you got VR, you have metaverse, you have all these type of, you know, like, there are, I have people that work on my team that basically their entire social life is with people online. I don't think they've actually met most of their cohort, but they're, you know, tight, and they got their posse and whatnot. But how has technology informed you on making changes in how you do storytelling? Or has storytelling really not changed and it's just the technology's changed?
I think technology, and this applies to video games, but not just video games, I think technology has played a super important role in empowering the user, empowering It created the distinction between a viewer and a participant. And I typically say participant because if you're a player, people immediately associate that experience to video games. But if you say participant, it could be a VR movie that you're watching. And you're not necessarily interfering with it, but you're still participating, you're still immersed in that experience. And I think that's the first step. Technology, and I remember even as a kid, I remember when I would get games like, for example, Mortal Kombat. And Mortal Kombat is a fighting game, but I would decide to play it just, I would get the two controllers. So I would choose the multiplayer mode, but I wouldn't have someone with me. I would use the two controllers to play out a fight, almost as in like, think of it as theater, you know, like almost like a stage play. And I would have one character talk to each other. Almost, it's almost like, again, I mentioned The Sims as a dollhouse. Like, think of now subverting Mortal Kombat and using it as a dollhouse experience. You're having the characters talk to each other, and then you decide, you have the fight play out, and you decide who stays alive and who in that case is defeated. And that was only possible because it was like the evolution of me grabbing some action figures and then figuring out what would happen if they were facing each other, but with the digital component added to that. And then if we go forward, what we also see from that experience is, because these tools offer me a new possibility and because I feel empowered, I also feel encouraged to experiment. And that's another area where I think video games and digital content, for the most part, are really, really, really insightful to us, not only on a societal level, but when it comes to content creation. We look at games today that are super immensely popular. We can start with Minecraft, but then let's take a look at Roblox. You know, these are all, and we could even call them metaverses, right? But these are all realities, digital realities, where people are creating their own content. And even if we take a step back and not look specifically at video games, what is the YouTube culture? What is the TikTok culture? What is the Twitch culture? We are necessarily in an age where the tools have been democratized. They have been made accessible to the audience, and the audience has taken this next step forward, again, as not just mere audience, as not just viewers, but now we are participants and even creators. And that has expanded in so many ways. Even right now, we're recording a podcast. And what's the best way to explain a podcast to someone who is potentially old school and maybe only had contact with the radio? You just say, hey, it's like a radio show, but it's online. But you're still using those references to make them understand. It's just that when we only had the radio around, it's not everyone that could just be like being on the radio. That was like for the very select few. And what we now have is we have this platform, these platforms, actually, it's not just one, right? But we have several platforms that empower people to experiment and to communicate and share those messages. And again, that is because of the technological impact and the tools above all that are offered. And this extends on so many levels. As a final example, it also extends to the creation, the actual technical creation of video games. Nowadays, we have tools. Of course, when I say nowadays, they have been around for decades. But if we look at Unity and Unreal, the two most famous game engines, right? Tools that people use to build their own games. These are libraries of code that just facilitate, that make people's lives easier. And before then, I even remember one of those, there was a meme with Bane from The Dark Knight Rises, and with that classic like Bane voice, you know, with the mask, he would say something like, oh, you think developing a game is easy? I come back from the age where we had to write our own code, you know? So it's so interesting to see how these tools, they facilitate the process in many ways, but then they open up new avenues for the content creation itself. It's like you're spending, depending on the experience you want to create, but you get the luxury of spending less time on the technical aspects, and you get to invest more time in the content itself.
Okay, that's really cool. Now, you talked about experimentation, democratization. You know, lots of user generated content. People can make their own games, but story fundamentally is why we're here for this conversation today, because it is critical for a game that succeeds, or a movie that succeeds, or a book, whatever that might be. That experience is fundamentally, as marketers, communicators, story is crucial. But when you have this democratization of the narrative, how do you, because I always see like the storyteller is someone that's kind of like almost the puppet master. You kind of want to guide someone through from A to B, and then they come to a conclusion and then they take an action. At least that's how I see it as an advertiser, as a marketer. You clearly wouldn't, because I mean, there's so many possibilities, right? So how do you take on a project when Disney calls you, Samsung calls you, Netflix calls you, to take a property that they have, make it into an experience that is immersive, yet the story still flows? Like I don't know the first thing about that. So that's, you know, I wanted to ask you that.
Well, but it's super cool that you mentioned the puppet master aspect of it. Just comparing, let's put it this way, interactive media with, let's say, passive media. And when you're watching a movie, think of it as a roller coaster. You have this finely detailed arc of tension. You have the story flow established. You have act one, act two, act three, or five acts if you want. You can use the hero's journey structure, but you have that story, the story planned out. Is that the case for video games? Yes, you also need planning. The difference is that whatever you plan, for example, people love to say, oh, with technology, the possibilities are infinite. Well, the truth is they're not, because you have to code, you have to plan the possibilities. So they are always finite. You know, you there is no infinite boundary. You can aim for the stars, but you will always have to prepare that groundwork and establish exactly where your player, your participant is able to interact. And what that means is that really, when you're creating a story in an interactive setting, depending on the story you're creating, but for the most part, you're really an illusionist, right? You're offering the tools so that the players feel, wow, I can make these decisions, and these decisions will take me on different paths. And that is true. As a creator, you did have to develop and write and plan these huge flowcharts that have several different branching up possibilities. But again, they had to be planned. It's not like you could say, do whatever you want, even for games like Minecraft and Roblox. So for example, going back to your question, whenever I'm working with a client or partner on a project, the first thing I ask, like the first thing, it's what's the core message we're communicating here? Because this is the same, this is where many platforms share this unique denominator, this common denominator, right? Which is, what is our log line? Like, you check out any TV show Bible, and they're going to have at least probably at the very beginning, if not the first page after the title cover, they're going to have, what is our log line? In one sentence, we are defining this experience. And that is so true, because even though the best experiences are layered, meaning you start with the high level concept and then you start going down deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, you still need to work with something that is immediately accessible. That's the concept. Like, I mean, marketing deals with that all the time, right? The more you flood, let's say, a specific ad or whatever it is you're creating, the more you flood it with that information, very likely the less powerful it will be, because your audience will not know what to pay attention to. But the more concise you are, and also not just the more concise, but the better your emotional hook, because believe, like, that's the thing. We're dealing with, storytelling is about dealing with emotions. We can look at big brands. We can even look at Coca-Cola, for example. Coca-Cola is very known for its branding, especially during Christmas time. But you never watch a Coca-Cola ad and they get to tell you what's in Coca-Cola or what the pop is made of. What you really see are people having a good time. No matter what they're doing, they could be playing football. They could be, I don't know, they could be just having dinner. That's super common, right? It's like you see this ad every year. It's a family having dinner, having Christmas dinner, and they're all smiling and laughing. And you can even hear, I can even hear right now, just the sound of the bottle being opened, you know?
The fizz.
And just the yes. And the fizz. And it's so impressive, right? That's the same logic that we have with audio logos, you know? It's like the Netflix with the doom-doom. It's the same thing. The fizz from Coca-Cola is the Netflix doom-doom. And that those patterns, they create emotional connections. So storytelling is all about creating emotional connections. The thing is, when we're working with video games, we're working with virtual reality, We're looking for other ways to create these emotional connections. And interactive media specifically, these emotional connections, they are created by the actions that the players, that the participants can perform. And that is why also, this is something that I find absolutely fascinating, which is how the genres are divided differently depending on what medium you're talking about. So if you ask someone, if they go to the movies and they say, oh yeah, I went to watch, just recently I watched Spider-Man No Way Home. And if someone asks like, oh, what's the genre? And I'm going to say, oh, it's a superhero movie. It's like an action adventure. And notice how I'm focusing when I say superhero, I'm bringing back that that emotion. It has some comedy in it. So it has some jokes, etc. There's a dramatic, strong dramatic element to it. But then when you say action adventure in the video game industry, you are not necessarily talking about the characters and the emotional vibe. You can have an action adventure game that has no superheroes involved at all. You can even think of, like, you can say things like puzzle is a genre. You can say things like 2D side scroller, platformer. These are, and think of it, platformer. How technical can you get with that? How much more technical can you get with that when you say platform? It's a game about jumping on platforms. And then you have all sorts of stories that encompass that mechanical experience of jumping on platforms. You have, in fact, one of them, a very interesting game, is called Thomas Was Alone. And it's just about using a geometrical shapes to tell the story in a very symbolic way. But then you have other platformers, Mario Brothers, for example, which has this very distinct representation of characters. Even if it's a fantastical world where a plumber is coming in to save a princess from these weird dinosaurs. So
it's not fantastical. That could happen.
Not at all. just go into the pipe and you'll end up in the other world.
Eat a mushroom. I interrupted you, but I wanted to kind of jump in there because, you know, we have a lot of advertising marketers in this space and in this audience. And I wanted to see, you know, I have a daughter who now, you know, on her iPad playing games and all kind of stuff. And I was kind of hanging out and there was an ad that showed up. And the ad itself was a game. It was actually a little game, a little immersive. She stayed on the frickin' ad for, I don't know, like the whole time of the duration of that because she was playing with said game. So do you have any insight for advertisers who maybe want to, you know, they're not going to jump in as hard as you with Cobra Kai or Sword Legacy or whatnot, right? Like to do the whole story. But is there some tips and tricks that you want to share when it comes to making these little pseudo game ads?
For sure. I think that just as I mentioned keywords such as empowerment and experimentation, there is one thing which I find fascinating. I was just talking about the differences between movies and games, right? And if you ask someone, again, going back to the Spider-Man example, you ask someone, hey, what did you think of the movie? And they say, oh, so Peter Parker, Spider-Man did this and that and da 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 da. But if you ask them if they played the Spider-Man game, they're not going to say Peter Parker did that. They're going to say, I did this. I did that. I beat the villain. Even if it's the Green Goblin, they're not going to say And then at the end, Spider-Man beat the Green Goblin. No, they're going to say, I beat the Green Goblin. So what's super interesting about this is the difference in which people connect to that content. You were mentioning the example, the case that happened with your daughter, like she was playing the game, the ad, which was really a game. But again, these were her decisions. So what's super interesting about this is when we think of creating content, regardless if it's for marketing, if it's just for TV or film or video games, it's really about thinking, if I have a core message, how can I make my audience feel responsible for that core message? Because one thing is sharing that core message with them, right? That's exposition. That's saying, hey, there's this issue. This happens a lot with documentaries, right? There's this issue happening in the world and we need to be conscious of it and we needed to do something about it. But I'm going to give you a very, very, very cool example. I used to teach a few years back. I used to teach just how to apply video game logic to the marketing industry. And I taught that at there was a school, the Miami Ad School. And I had some students there that I just showed them, talked with them about the genres, the different genres in video games, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Cut to what, 3 years later, maybe 3.5 years later. And one of my students, ex-students, just got in touch and told me, hey, look what I did with what you shared during your class. So basically, here's what they're doing. There's this project called, I think it's GTA plus 3 degrees. And they're using Grand Theft Auto. They're using specifically San Andreas, which is the GTA representation of California. And they're using GTA to show what is going to happen to the world because of global warming once 3 degrees go up. So you're going to have floods. You're going to have all sorts of natural disasters. You're going to have serious consequences. And they're being represented in the game. And you can play the game because it is a modification of GTA. And you can play GTA, which is, again, even for... I think GTA, honestly, as a series, it is fascinating. It works. It does a fantastic old job when it comes to just creating immersive storytelling. But let's say you have a different perspective. Let's say you think, GTA, come on. It's that game where you're committing crimes. It's that game where it's not really appropriate for people or maybe just adults. But now here you have GTA, the same technological structure, represented in a completely different light, and it's being used to get people to live in that space that just really makes you understand, even if not in the flesh and bone, but at least in the metaverse, you get and understand the consequences of global warming. So I think that delivers a much stronger message in the sense that people can interact with the world and see the consequences of that world. That's why when it comes to storytelling, and I mean, first of all, that's why I'm a storyteller, and that's why everything I create has a narrative drive to it, because my main goal is sharing messages and getting people to think critically about their decisions in real life, but of course using art and entertainment as an inspiration, but getting them to think about those decisions, because every decision comes with the consequence. It's just that in life, because we don't travel through time, we can't really see the immediate necessarily for all of the decisions we make, the immediate consequences. But in a game, yes, we can. In very famous and popular games like The Witcher or even the Telltale games, The Walking Dead and Batman, etc., you get to see very interesting details. Like the Telltale series, it is known for just doing one thing, which is super curious. When you have a dialogue choice in a game, and let's say there's a character that requires of you a very specific decision, and you can choose to help them or not, regardless of what you choose, typically the Telltale games would show at the top, I think, left corner of the screen, it would show something like, this character will remember this. And you don't know what's going to happen in the future, but just because the game decides to show you that little message, you're already on edge. Like, oh no, what did I do? Or yes, I'm confident of my decision. So it's so interesting because that's what really what games allow us to do. They give us the opportunity as interactive experiences to find out what really happens when we make a decision. There are consequences for every single decision we make in life. But in games, we get to test that reality. And by testing that reality, hopefully that will make us more conscious in the real world as well.
That's a lot. I mean, I loved your comment around the fact that you're wanting it to be less of an exposition, but more to have folks find that responsibility for their decision. I think that's super powerful. With regards to let's dive into, you know, platforms. We talked about an IP and how franchises work. So, you know, you just did Cobra Kai recently. That's it. When we reconnected, you're like, hey, Ted, I did Cobra Kai. I'm like, oh, man, I've been watching it because, you know, I grew child of the 80s. But there's a lot of power to that, right? Like you said GTA, you said Witcher. I mean, we didn't talk about this, but like League of Legends, I know my staff play it. And then I watch Arcane on Netflix. So let's talk a bit about that. And then I actually want to dive into the metaverse. But let's talk about that first, the power of the franchise and how you see that evolving over the next, I don't know, 10, 15 years.
For sure. I think I'm just collecting key keywords as we go, right? But aside from empowerment and experimentation, I think there's also the concept of connection, of relatability. And what we see today are several franchises and several intellectual properties really making sure that they establish a strong foothold and that they are there in the industry for decades to come. I mean, a very obvious example of that is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. if you think about it, like you have, and it can be very daunting. I think it's so interesting because I was thinking about this recently. What's the balance, right, between having too much content and too little content, right? Mm-hmm. But then again, the whole idea of it is a universe is being created, and this universe serves as the bedrock, the foundation for all of the stories you will be able to tell. Taking Cobra Kai as an example, right? My work was understanding the show and adapting the show to an interactive format. And I had to, at the same time that I had certain liberties that I could make good use of, I also had to be very mindful of the IP, of its message, of its tone. And everything that I did obviously went through the approval of the Cobra Kai team at Netflix, at Sony. And they would offer very valuable feedback. So, for example, a case that I like to exemplify in the case of the game is that from a game development perspective, from a game design perspective, the Cobra Kai game needed to have like freezing punches and flaming kicks because it's Cobra Kai, Johnny Lawrence, representing anger and all of this rage and this resentment from the past years. And then you have Daniel LaRusso representing Mr. Miyagi and the Zen-like stance and the mindfulness of it and the peace-like aspect of it and the defense, right, above all. So there is a strong concept there, which we were working with it ever since its beginning. You cannot deny that Cobra Kai is about rivalries. Again, it's about two characters who 34 years later are still doing this. They even use this line at one point in the show, and they call it the warring dojos, you know? So it's these dojos, just like you had the warring states in feudal Japan, you have the warring dojos in modern day California. And how can you bring that same rivalry to the game? Of course, we had the two dojos, you have the two different characters. I would make very often callbacks to moments in this show. So I would have characters reference specific episodes or situations that happened. I would develop further their connection. But there was one issue. Again, we don't have freezing kicks and flaming punches in the show. It doesn't take that step towards the fantastical, right? But the game did. So what I figured out was, well, I can still tell a story that feels unreal but is still relatable if I frame that in the characters, not the adults, but in the teenagers. And then what you have is two narrators, and these two narrators are Hawk and Dimitri from the show, and they are unreliable narrators who are actually trying to tell their own versions of this tall tale of how all of these fights happened to the school principal. So each of them has their own version, and of course, in their own version, Cobra Kai would win, Miyagi-Do would win, and then, of course, something else that I did was, if you play as the two dojos, you get to see the convergence between these two stories, and you get to find out, really, the true ending, let's put it that way, or if there is some truth to what both of them are saying, or how they can find out what are the differences. So, again, this was fantastic because if you think about it, I got the chance to create this original tale, but it was still in the Cobra Kai universe. And at one point, we even discussed internally, wouldn't it be cool if we had a blank slate character, like a new kid on the block who's just arriving here to the West Valley High School? And then we thought, yes, that would be fun. And if you can make decisions, etc. But at a first glance, This is the first time we get the opportunity to take the Cobra Kai show to the interactive world. Who do we know that characters really relate to? It's the characters in the show. So we have to prioritize Johnny, Daniel, Dimitri, Hawk, Sam, Tori, Robbie, and so on. We need to make sure that these characters feel good to play with and that you, especially above all, you can play with them. Right. So that was our priority. And again, that wouldn't be our priority if our focus wasn't on making sure that players were able to connect with the characters that they already saw on the show. What we did really was look at the show, get a really good understanding of the core message of rivalry, and metaphorically represent that rivalry in different ways. It wasn't just about the dialogues. Of course, we have dialogues in the game, but that rivalry manifests itself in the fact that you can play as both sides. You can be Miyagi-Do or you can be Cobra Kai. And if you're Johnny, you will fight Daniel. And if you're Daniel, you will fight Johnny. But if you get to the true ending, you get to see also that there are some moments of bonding between the two dojos. And maybe that's also an interesting potential alternative path as a solution for the dojos. So it's, again, really about the way I like to see it is mechanics in a game. They are metaphors, right? You have emotions that you want to communicate in the story. And then you have the tools to communicate those emotions. And in movies, we do that with camera work. In games, we do that with camera work as well. You have specific framing in movies and TV. And then you also have very similar elements. But then again, that's why going back to our initial question or the topic that we started with, that's why we have these connections between literature and movie making and filmmaking. Because games, they combine a little bit of both from several different platforms. And again, that's how we get the opportunity to expand IPs, to expand franchises without repeating content. Because that's the main difference between adapting content, but in a sense that you're repeating the story. Of course, we have several of those, right? If you take a look at many licensed games are usually, hey, you watch the movie, now play the movie. But what we wanted to do here is like, what happens if we create a story that actually completes or even expands this world? It's what, at the time, they became super, super famous for this, but it's the transmedia approach that The Matrix did back then. And you had the movie The Matrix, and you had the second movie, Matrix Reloaded, but you had the game Enter the Matrix, or even the animations from Animatrix that would complete that lore, that sense of lore in that world. So really, it's about understanding the IP, that world, and looking into interesting ways of expanding that world. Just like, again, just to wrap this example, but if you look at Cobra Kai has also been taken to other platforms and other mediums in other cases. So if you look up, there's a comic book adaptation of the Karate Kid movie. And then you get to see in that comic book adaptation, you get to see some scenes that were not in the movie. So even though it's still an adaptation of the movie, the story that you saw in the movie, you do get to see some extra content. And what we wanted to do with the game is this is all extra content. You get to play this different alternative reality that is still in the world of Cobra Kai.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's move to Metaverse. So you talked about, cited a number of examples of, you know, this was an example of Metaverse, Roblox is an example of Metaverse, but it really only got into the public mind's eye, I would say, when Zuckerberg decided to change, you know, Facebook to Meta. Now everyone's talking about it, but is it really that much of a departure than what we had, I don't know, 6 months before the announcement? Wasn't it not always going to just merge that way anyhow, or what are your thoughts around that?
My perspective is, of course, we have the evolution of technology, but it's not as if we didn't have the the main elements of the metaverse already like around for even years back. Like one of the
Second Life. Most.
Yes, I was going to say that. Second Life, perfect example. And you know what's super interesting? Because when Second Life started, people looked at it as this opportunity to just connect with each other. Like think of like just this big internet forum, like Threads. Think of like Reddit or whatever. It was just like a digital reality Reddit. You know, you could meet with people, you could talk with them. But then, wait, Second Life? Let's take a step back. Did any of you play Ultima Online? Did any of you play so many RPGs that already did that with the added factor that you were your own character role-playing your lives? And you already, and I mean, I remember when I used to play a bunch of Neverwinter Nights, which is also an RPG. And Neverwinter Nights back then had an online mode that was fantastic. It was a mode where one person could be the dungeon master and all of the other players would join the session. And the dungeon master would create the environment in real time, just create the levels so that people could go through that adventure. And it's the same exact experience. I mean, of course, you have the digital component added, but I mean, structurally speaking, it's the same experience that you would have when you're playing a tabletop RPG. So, but if you wanted to just join the server and not necessarily play a dungeon, if you just wanted, I did that. My character was a bard and I would go to the tavern and I would just like recite poetry on the spot. And I would recite poetry and then I would talk to other characters and we would role play, right? So I wasn't Arthur really, I was the bard. But as the bard, I would just have this casual communication and conversation with people who were already part of that world. What I mean to say is the social aspect of it was already there. Whether people chose to role play or not, people were already using these structures as a place to chat. You know, it was like you had the visuals added, you had the interaction. I remember, for example, if I saw someone, I would bow. I was this bard who was reciting poetry. So I had animations that I could use to even represent how I felt, but how my character was physically portraying themselves in that specific digital world. So I think it's very strange to say that now we have the metaverse. Honestly, I think we've had it for a long, long time. We just didn't call it the metaverse, you know? We call it either by the title of the project, by the product, as in Ultima Online or Ragnarok or Lineage or Choose Your RPG. And if we go back to Second Life, which what was so interesting about Second Life is that, yes, I do think Second Life broke frontiers in the sense that it wasn't, although people could go to just mingle and socialize, eventually companies, corporations, and institutions started using Second Life to even host like online classes and online talks and online events, online conferences. So very interesting, right? Because it almost feels as like the pandemic happened in early 2020. And then we had all of this movement towards the online space. And then we had different platforms there. Some of them were even created just so conferences could be held online. To be fair, we didn't have the presence of the video camera that much back then. It was mostly represented in the digital characters. We didn't have like the video conference. Like, of course, we had, like, for example, I've been working remotely since 2015. And I would use the video conferencing or even just audio. But the video conferencing as an added component to a digital world, that's something that I certainly think the pandemic accelerated. However, it's not as if we didn't have already the structure for these online conferences present in the platforms that RPGs hosted and Second Life hosted as well. We saw that happening. So it's kind of weird to think that, oh, because of the pandemic, now we have this metaverse. No, the metaverse was always there. I think the pandemic just accelerated, you know, the process. And just as it accelerated the process of remote work. So we already had the metaverse, but now we have a name for it, or at least we have a name that everyone uses, you know? Before then we had like Second Life. Oh, what is Second Life? A digital 3D space for mingling and socializing. Oh, no, it's not for mingling and socializing. It's for conferencing. You go there and you watch talks and it's amazing and different schools are using it and you can actually see the different spaces. Even the PlayStation, if I'm not mistaken, the PlayStation Home, they had a virtual space as well for you to check out the different games. So again, it's the concept of inhabiting a 3D space was always there. I think, again, what's happening from this point on is now that at least both of us have already acknowledged that the space was already there. What's happening from this point on really is just that these spaces are being made more accessible. If before they were sort of a niche experience, now this is being pushed out there as something that everyone will use and have access to. So I think that's the main difference, really. And again, this goes back to what I was saying about the logline, right? And this goes back even to the concept of, wait, what's the difference between a cult independent indie movie and a cult indie game to a blockbuster movie? Sometimes you have the same stories. Sometimes you have even the same tropes. But one is huge, has a very likely a massive budget, and can get the word out there using marketing, using just its production values, using big names, etc. So it's really about accessibility. And I think the whole discussion of what is the metaverse is, hey, the metaverse is something that has been around for a long time. But now for many people, it's something that you get to know of, and that you even get to know its name, or now it has a name. And it's these 3D spaces that we can inhabit and that we can use for several different purposes. It can be just for playing, but it can also, yes, be used to have conferences, and it can also be used to do a collective mood board, or do some flow charting. Whatever it is, you can choose the purpose of that use.
So when you're saying, metaverse because of marketing or timing or whatever it is, while it's been around for a decade and then some, probably even longer than that, it's really now come to the fore in public discourse. Now, what about stories, right? Stories is kind of as old as time. We've had stories since humankind has existed. And, in your world, would you say that fundamentally the stories that we tell each other have been the same, right? Like rivalry, love, romance, perseverance, anger, like those are human emotions that we've carried for a millennia. So would you say that you're really taking stories and maybe making variations of them and applying them to new technology, or are there actually new stories?
Very interesting question. I think it's a combination of both. At a first glance, I would say, yes, these are the same stories being retold and retold and retold through variations. But then, how can they be retold? My take is that we retell stories because not only do we have tried and true structures, and then we can go back to the hero's journey, for example, it's super common, right? Most people know the idea of the monomyth. Most people know that we have mythology being retold through different characters in different societies and tribes and cultures. But that is because we are dealing essentially with basic emotions. Stories are about emotions. And then we go back to the Coca-Cola example, right? It's about it's about feeling good. It's about, or it's about revenge, or it's about connecting with your family. Or it's about love. Why do we have, think of music. I mean, music is also a fascinating way of telling stories. And because there are so many different ways to tell stories through music, right? But if you take a look, how many songs and tracks are out there about love? Like, I'd say it's most of them, different variations. Of course, you've been hurt, but you still love, or you love and you're happy because you're together. There are so many possibilities. But yes, the core emotion is you have found someone that you truly connect with, or you maybe have even lost someone that you truly connected with. So again, we're dealing with now it's not even a log line. It's just like a key, like one single word that defines the core emotion of that experience. So yes, that's why I think we have been retelling the same. We have been using the same emotions to create variations of stories that already exist. However, there is one thing that I think is super, super, super interesting, which is the idea that no matter what type of story you're telling, there's also the issue of context. What is the context you're dealing with, right? And the context is especially relevant depending on the zeitgeist, depending on what are people talking about right now. So I just recently saw, I was taking a look at the Nebula Awards, the finalists for the Nebula Awards. And for context, the Nebula Awards, they're sort of like the, think of them as the Oscars of fantasy and science fiction. So they award not only literature, but also games and shows, etc. And among the games, there is one particular, which is a tabletop RPG. That is, I think it's The Wolf and the Crow. I might be not saying the right name right now, but it is essentially an RPG that like had a crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter, and they wanted $18,000 initially, and they got like over 1 million. And why? Why did it get so much, such a strong connection? And how did people really resonate with that? Because it is a tabletop RPG about a world where colonization never happened. Because, and it's all made by natives and people who are natives of North America, of different continents. And they are telling, for sure, I guarantee, I haven't even read the RPG yet, but I can guarantee there will be what, rivalries, there will be love, there will be betrayal, there will be all sorts of emotions that we're already used to dealing with. But they are presented in a different context, a context that is especially relevant today, which is discussing diversity and inclusion. So when we talk about, you know, because, for example, there's this author, super famous author, Harry Turtledove, and he specialized in writing what if stories. For example, what would happen if the Axis won the Second World War? And then we even have stories like that with the Man in the High Castle, right? Even as a show.
Yeah, watch that show. Great show.
Yeah. So amazing, right? And we have like, what ifs are not uncommon. What ifs are actually the genesis of every story that we tell, because one of the easiest ways to come up with a story is read the news and then ask yourself, but what if something else happened? And not by chance, there's a show made by the MCU called The What If, which are animations that ask what would happen. What if Thanos had not gotten the soul gems, the gemstones? What would happen? You know, so it's so interesting that we are always asking ourselves what would happen in this quote unquote parallel reality. But what happened to be, for example, a very relevant discussion when we were closer to 1940s, 1950s, thinking of world wars, now, for example, is the discussion of inclusivity and diversity and these backgrounds that are so relevant and that come from cultures that people know so little about. And I personally can speak to that because I'm Brazilian. I come from Latin America. And it's so interesting to see these connections, these clashes, these cultural clashes. And they're so positive and they're so amazing. So you get the chance to just really bring, you know, like new life. You get the chance to, it's a breath of fresh air, you know, you get to offer more possibilities. But again, it's the context, it's the theme, but the core emotions, they are the same, you know, it's, we're going to be dealing with, because it's really what we connect with. Like it's, think of horror movies. There are so many, if you even think of the structure of a horror movie, typically they start with a mystery and eventually the mystery is revealed and then it turns into more of an action moment. Some movies, of course, end before that when you're just about to reveal the mystery, when you reveal the mystery and maybe the protagonist doesn't get the chance to fight back. But they deal with one singular emotion, which is fear, the primal emotion of fear. And this is an interesting coincidence. If you think of the comparison between TV and film and games when it comes to horror experiences, because we have obviously horror games, but horror games are the ones that literally force you to face your fears. Because if you don't do that, you're not going to be able to advance the story. So you have to take action. You have to, okay, again, going back to concepts we discussed, you have to take responsibility. You have to face your fear and you have to move forward with that specific action to see what's going to happen next. So for that reason, we even have a genre in the video game industry, which is called the survival horror, because it is a game that makes you survive. And survive can take several different, can have several different meanings. It can be the management of resources, for example. So that is telling a story. Also, you asked about story. Super important. there is this concept of storytelling in games, which in my opinion applies to all platforms, but it is more noticeable in games, which is just the concept of we have in every storytelling platform, we have what I call or what people call, where this is not a concept that I came up with. It's an academic discussion. It's been around for quite some time. And it's the concept of embedded narrative. An embedded narrative is all of the content that you embed that platform with, right? As the screenwriter, as the storyteller, as the director, as even the programmer, you embed that experience with code. That code has meaning. And that will communicate a certain experience, even if it's a game where you offer choices to the players and they can choose to either save someone or kill that person. Now, what happens when the player goes through that experience? Well, they choose one of these options, or even if they don't get like narrative driven choices, even if it's just Mario Brothers. And again, it's a platform and you're just jumping. And at one point you accidentally make a wrong jump and you fall into this huge gap and you die and you lose and you're defeated. Well, that's your story. That's why we say it was going back to the Spider-Man example. That's why I defeated the Green Goblin and not someone else. So that is the concept of emergent narrative. And again, that's why I think it's so important to understand that whatever story we tell, it will always, always be open to interpretation, even if it's a book. You can write a novel, but you are not in control of what your audience will interpret from what you read, from what they read. You can try to be as explicit as possible. And then, of course, that's a from a storyteller's perspective, that it's a tricky balance, right? How much do you want that ending to be open-ended, or how much do you want it to be left to open to interpretation, to just really leave the audience to connect the symbols? But then again, yes, whatever we create is always subject to analysis, to review. And that is an integral part of storytelling, understanding that we offer the resources and then it's up to the participants to connect the dots.
Wow. I mean, Arthur, thank you very much for all of that. It's a lot of content that I've had to digest and hear. I really love the fact that you said that it's really the context that's different, that fundamentally the stories have been the same, but you know, the what ifs and whatnot are great. Now, I do want to, just end the call here with maybe some rapid fire questions to get to know our superhero of the day, a little bit more. Let's jump in. So, favorite Disney character. Let's use that.
Wow. Favorite Disney character. Well, the first one that first came to my mind is Elsa from Frozen.
Elsa. Nice. Yeah. What is your favorite hobby that you had as a kid?
I did a bit of everything. I just really loved writing. Oh, okay. Okay. So this is a good one. I loved when I couldn't even write, I used to draw comics and then I would recite the dialogues to my grandma and she would write in the dialogues for me. So that is something I really had a good time with, just creating comics, even if I didn't know how to write.
Sweet or savory?
Savory for sure.
Rom-com, sci-fi, horror, or insert your favorite genre.
I am a Black Mirror fan, so I'm always going to go for those stories that had deliver a punch to the gut and that make you really, really reflect on your existence.
Do you like biking, swimming, or running?
I like biking, but I love the beach, so swimming.
And place you're going to travel now that the restrictions look like they're starting to ease up?
Wow, excellent question. I want to go back to home. I want to visit Brazil again. But then if I get the chance, I want to explore other countries that I haven't visited yet in South America.
Okay. Well, hey, Arthur, thank you very much. It was a lovely chat and hearing kind of your mind work and understanding storytelling a little bit more, I think has been extremely, extremely rewarding for me. Thank you very much. And congratulations on all your success.
Thank you so much, Ted. This was a blast, truly an honor. And I hope we stay in touch because I really, really had a really good time.
Well, thanks everybody for another great episode of Marketing News Canada. I'm Ted, this is Arthur, and we're signing off.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded in the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editors Travis Jeffers and the Podfather.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.